Welcome into another edition of the Dan and Victory podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. I am Rick. He is Dan. And for this edition, we are joined by a special guest, a friend of the podcast, one you've heard on here a few times. And obviously, he used to cover Xavier for various media outlets before coming to his senses and moving on to a wiser, more lucrative career choice. He is Doug Tift, the resident Big East expert on the musketeerreport.com message boards. Doug, really appreciate all your hard work on the boards, man. I hope you're enjoying the money you're making from all of that.
Yeah, it's really flowing in these days. But thanks for having me, guys.
Not a problem. Okay, so to start this off, obviously the hot topic, Miles Davis and him being back in Cincinnati. He tweeted out, it basically was a retweet of someone who said they saw him at the movie theaters, signifying that he was back in town. And then he's had a few cryptic tweets since that. And then today, his Twitter account was closed down. Basically, I've done some digging, as everyone's been doing on the Xavier front, and what I've heard so far is in workouts since he's been back, he's not practicing with the team, obviously, but in workouts since he's been back, he has been working out. He looks like he's not incredibly out of shape or not ready to help the team at all. I heard basically he looks good. He's in decent shape, not tip top shape, probably not game ready shape. He's still probably a few weeks away from being fully ready to go and where you'd want him to be at this point in the year. But basically the general consensus was positive that he looks like he's in pretty good shape and that it's not going to take him too long before he's back in the flow of things in terms of his game. And also where he was at mentally seems to be in decent spirits, all things considered, and seems to be just looking forward to putting all this past him, learning from it, and just moving on, getting back to playing basketball. So that's where things stand. I have a little more. I'll post it on the message board before in terms of what I think when he'll be back and start playing. But so you can check that out on musketeerreport.com message boards. But that's sort of the latest in terms of where Miles Davis is at with his body and how much he'll be able to help the team. Because I know that was kind of the big concern everybody had. As obviously Miles has been a guy who's always struggled to kind of keep his weight down and stay in good shape, and him going away for a full semester with no supervision was a big concern, understandably so, for a lot of people. But it sounds like he's done a decent job of keeping his body in shape. So with that being said, we're going to move on to breaking down the Big East Conference and giving a preview, a look at all these teams. Dan, you want to take it away?
So this is the way we're going to do this, folks. We're going to basically take the teams in what Rick and I determined is roughly the expected order of finish, starting with the defending national champions and going to Rick's favorite Division I team. I'm going to start off by giving sort of a capsule summary of where each team stands in the non-conference so far. Any rankings I use, unless I say differently, are based on KenPom.com as of today, which is the 27th of December. And then I will turn it over to Rick and Doug to launch takes at each other from 10 paces until one or both of them has expired. So shall we start with Villanova, Rick?
Let's do it.
All right. So Nova, defending national champions, you've heard of them probably. 12-0 on the season, number one in both the AP and coaches polls. They're doing okay. Their biggest wins of note, they beat Purdue on the road, who's 12th in KenPom, and then also beat number 24 Notre Dame in a really exciting game on a neutral venue that was in come-from-behind fashion. 6-0 against the top 100. 3-0 against the top 50. Their strength of schedule is at 77, which, as we'll hit on, I believe is the second best in the Big East, or the third best, actually, in the Big East thus far. So, Rick, let's start with you. Your thoughts on Nova thus far?
Well, I think they're the best team in the country right now, and they're a team. That's the thing. I guess the biggest question I have about Nova right now is, do they even have a weakness? Like, what do you pick on if you're an opponent? What do you go after? How do you try to beat this Nova team? I haven't really seen a great game plan. Obviously, no one's knocked them off, so nothing that's worked to that effect. But I haven't really seen a great game plan in terms of, like, oh, here was a gimmick that worked against them, or here's how you have to attack them. Doug, do you see a weakness with this Villanova team right now? Because I don't.
The only one that I see is that they're a little thin up front as compared to previous seasons. I mean, Daryl Reynolds is playing extremely well down low in the post for them, giving them 25 minutes a game and quality minutes. He's a top 300 guy in the country in terms of rebound percentage, and so he's giving you pretty much a lot of what they had last season in the post. But there's really nothing behind them. Dylan Painter is really he's playing like 4 or 5 minutes a game. There's really nothing to speak of when Reynolds goes to the bench. They're actually playing small. They're playing Chris Jenkins at the five sometimes. So that is really the only thing there is if they come up against a team that is really has a really big front line and rebounds really well, that could be what gets Villanova in trouble.
You don't think Eric Paschal's helped them out at all in that regard?
He has. I think I was going to say that. It's kind of the same way where you look at Xavier and Xavier makes up for – Xavier has some shot blocking down low, but – Xavier makes up for it. The reason that Xavier's a good defensive team is there's kind of sneaky length on the wings in that Trayvon is longer than the average four, the average 6'6" guy. JP's got long arms. Malcolm has long arms. In the same way, Villanova has a couple of guys. You look at Bridges. You look at Eric Paschal. You look at even Dante DiVincenzo and Josh Hart, of course. All those guys are long and lanky defenders on the wings. So they help out and they make up for some of those deficiencies in the post by rebounding on the defensive end and kind of getting in passing lanes and coming down to hedging and even closing up lanes, passing lanes to enter the ball into the post. So that helps kind of alleviate those issues with the thinness behind Daryl Reynolds.
My favorite Villanova stat right now, Eric Paschal's listed weights. In 2015, when he was at Fordham as a freshman, he was listed at 6'6", 205 pounds. Currently, he's listed at 6'7", 250 pounds as a sophomore who sat out a year now at Villanova. And I do think he's added some toughness inside and given them another option, because that was my concern coming into the season was without Daniel Ochefu, they're just not going to be nearly as good inside. But I think, like you said, Daryl Reynolds has really picked up his game, taking it to another level. And then Eric Paschal has, in my opinion, helped them out, given them a little more depth. And, you know, they're not great inside, but it's not something I would call a weakness in a way that you can really, I think, get after them and attack them. So I guess the last thing would be Josh Hart. Is he your favorite for National Player of the Year, as he is mine?
He's got to be. I mean, I can't even think of, like, the Kentucky guys are playing out of their minds, but it seems like a different guy every night. Hart has just been amazing across the board in almost every big game. He had the triple-double earlier this year and stuff. He's got to be the front runner right now for National Player of the Year for the Naismith Award.
I think from a lot of people I've heard and the national guys I've been reading, the second guy they have right there with them, well, sometimes Frank Mason from Kansas I've heard, which is probably another good option. Not my favorite guy, but I see why. I mean, he really is having a tremendous year. The other guy is Lonzo Ball, the point guard from UCLA.
Yeah,
And he's really changed the dynamic of their offense, but to me, he just doesn't have the complete package that Josh Hart has in terms of being one of the best defenders in the country, being able to rebound at that high level, being such—I mean, just he's so good in so many ways that I just think he's got to be the guy right now.
Yeah, I'd also mention real quick that be remiss we didn't mention that Brunson is having the type of year that you kind of might have expected him to have. He's shooting like 41% from three, and the guy just doesn't turn the ball over. So he's kind of, I mean, Josh Hart's been amazing, but Brunson has been the type of guy that you kind of expected when he came in as a five-star recruit.
Yeah, great point. I think a lot of people expected the loss of Ryan Arcidiacono to be a big loss for them, but when you look at it, I think Jalen Brunson's actually better than Ryan Arcidiacono was. So go ahead, Dan.
I would agree with that. My only hot Philadelphia take would be that I can understand how that dude gained 45 pounds because the pork sandwich from Denick's at Reading Terminal Market is, in my humble opinion, the best sandwich I've ever had. Let's move on to Creighton, I guess, next. Creighton or Butler, Rick, where do you want to go next?
Creighton sounds good.
Let's go Creighton. Okay, Blue Jays also undefeated so far in the season, 12-0. They're 21st in KenPom, which is actually the fourth best KenPom rating in the league. That's on the basis of being ninth in the country in offensive efficiency, only 73rd in defensive efficiency. They're actually ranked a little higher than that, 17th in Sagarin, 10th in the AP poll, and ninth in the coaches' poll. Creighton is Creighton's marquee win so far this year. They beat Wisconsin in the Gavitt games in Omaha. Wisconsin's number 10, according to Pomeroy, and they beat number 57, North Carolina State, on a neutral court. Of their 12 wins, five are against the top 100. Only one, that Wisconsin game, against the top 50. And their strength of schedule isn't very good. It's actually only 186 out of about 355. So, Doug, we'll start with you on Creighton. I mean, this is a team that just seems to have just a huge variety of offensive weapons. I mean, where do you see their biggest, the biggest threat that they pose at the offensive end?
Well, they're an unbelievable three-point shooting team. They're the best three-point shooting team in the country, according to percentage-wise. And they just have so many weapons. Outside of Zach Hansen, anybody that they're putting on the court can shoot the three and shoot it well. And it's just a nightmare of a matchup, especially for a team like Xavier that struggles with a guy who can play in the post, which their freshman, Justin Patton, has become. And then you have a lightning-quick point guard, Mo Watson, who, of course, torched Xavier last year and has only gotten better. He's averaging 9 assists a game this year. So they're just a nightmare matchup for a lot of teams on the offensive end. There is kind of another side of that coin. They don't rebound the ball especially well. And in kind of the typical Musketeer Report message board, angry poster, they don't shoot free throws well. So they haven't gotten in a game this year where they've been tested at the end of the game at the free throw line. So it's kind of odd that they're an unbelievable three-point shooting team. But you look across the board, Mo Watson is a 59% free throw shooter. Marcus Foster is a 67% free throw shooter. Kyrie Thomas is 77%. Justin Patton is 47%. So it gets into a close game at the end, and they could struggle. That's kind of where I see they might be vulnerable. But the way they shoot the three, they might never get into a situation where they're tested at the end.
Yeah, I look at this Creighton team, and I think they're not as good as Villanova. They're not as solid. They have more weaknesses. They don't defend nearly as well. And I think they're more prone to a bad game because they are more of a shooting team. That being said, they're not relying on the three nearly as much as you would think they would. When you think back to like the Doug McDermott, Ethan Rogge team that was just bombs away all the time. This team doesn't shoot as many threes as that team did, and it's surprising because they shoot it at such a high clip. You would think McDermott's coaching style would want them shooting more. But I think you have Maurice Watson and Foster are so good at making plays as well and getting to the lane, and Justin Patton's so good on the inside that you have to use him. So my hot take would be that while this team isn't quite as good as Villanova, I think they'll beat Xavier twice because they give Xavier more problems than Villanova does. The way Xavier's kind of built the roster, they've built it to be very much like Villanova. On the flip side, Creighton has a 7-foot center whose length and athleticism could give Xavier's big men trouble from what we've seen earlier this year. And then Maurice Watson is the prototypical point guard that's designed to beat the way Xavier plays, which is that hard hedging the ball, screens, and trying to recover and using the pack line defense. So if he's able to get in the lane and make plays, and quite honestly, he's been the best in the conference at that so far this year, I think it's going to be very difficult for Xavier to beat this Creighton team.
Rick, do you think Cole Huff is a surefire NBA Hall of Famer?
I know one message board poster who does. Mad Dog 88. But
anything
no,
else
no,
you
no.
guys
he can really shoot it.
Want to throw into the mix about Creighton, or should we move on to the puppies?
The only other thing about Creighton is Kyrie Thomas, their other guard, besides Mo Watson and Marcus Foster, are going to get the headlines. But Kyrie Thomas has really taken a step forward. He was kind of a afterthought recruit out of Omaha, maybe a two-star, a three-star at most guy. And he's stepped forward into he's maybe like an honorable mention all-conference type player this season. He's shooting the ball extremely well, and just kind of the way they play up-tempo and kind of push the ball helps him out offensively, getting a lot of good looks in transition. But he's defended well on the wing, and he's become kind of their third option. Fourth option after Patton, but just another way to attack a defense and made them even more dangerous.
All right. Oh, Rick, by the way, I looked up our old buddy Ethan Rogge. He is currently playing for the Gießen 46ers of the German Bundesliga, and one of his teammates is Braden Hobbs, who played at Bellarmine and I think was on that team that upset Xavier in the exhibition game a few years ago.
Indeed he was. Over under on how many braces Mr. Rogge is wearing these days?
I bet he cannot go through the normal security line at the airport.
I'm going to go. Right. If you set the over under at 3, I'm going. He's averaging a push.
All right, let's go to my favorite team in the Big East, the Butler Bulldogs. They're 11-1 so far this season, 17th in KenPom, 16 offense, 34th in defensive efficiency. Butler's big win so far this year, they beat a surprisingly good Northwestern team who may actually make the NCAA tournament this year, miraculously, who's number 46 in the country, beat them at Hinkle. Got a nice neutral win over number 18 Arizona. They went to Utah and won, which I mention only because, as Xavier can attest, some of those Western road trips can be a little bit tricky. And obviously beat the UC Bearcats at Hinkle, and then beat Indiana at Canseco Fieldhouse or whatever they call it now. Their only loss was an away game at Indiana State, which is a major upset. Indiana State, you know, somewhere in the 150 range in KenPom. They're 6-0 against the top 100, 4-0 against the top 50, which I believe is the most top 50 wins in the league. Their strength of schedule is only 73 because their bye games have been pretty bad, but they have the second-best strength of schedule in the league behind Xavier so far. Rick, I'm going to say that I think Butler probably has the – even though Villanova obviously has been perfect, Villanova and Creighton both been perfect, Villanova is number one in the country. I think Butler – you could argue has the best resume of any team in the Big East going into conference play.
Oh yeah, I think they do. I mean, the Arizona and Indiana neutral wins are huge, and then I mean you also beat UC at home, and I mean you mentioned all the wins, so I don't got to go re-throw them. But yeah, they've put together a really strong resume, and I don't think the Indiana State loss will be as big of a deal. I mean, you just have to chalk that one up to Larry Bird's birthday, playing on the road against Indiana State. And I think you just throw it out at the end of the year if the resume still looks really good. So I don't think it'll hurt them that badly. They're the biggest surprise to me coming into the year. I thought they were going to be decent, solid, but I didn't expect them to be this good. I loved Keelan Martin. I didn't like the rest of the pieces. The reason they're better than I expected, Tyler Lewis has been out of his mind good, at least early in the non-conference. That would be my biggest question going forward. Does he continue to play at that level? Because he started to trail off the last few games. Now, not a huge concern necessarily. He doesn't have to score a ton of points every game for them to be good, but he needs to be consistent and continue playing at that high level. That's been part of the reason they've been so good. Also, Tyler Wideman has taken a major step forward, and then the freshman, Kamar Baldwin, 6-foot guard, tremendous, tremendous defender for a freshman. Also been a very just solid, kind of efficient offensive player, good 3-point shooter that picks his spots well. I like what I've seen from him. So, yeah, I think this Butler team, they fit really well together. Your boy Shrabez has been playing like good Shrabez instead of bad Shrabez for most of the year. So they're tough. They're legit.
I wouldn't say he's been good Shrabez. I'd say he's been out of his mind Shrabez.
Yeah, that's more accurate.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Andrew Shrabez won't end the season shooting 75% from three, which is what he was shooting like 7 games into the season. He's down to like 50% now.
Yeah,
from
52.
But still, he's a 30%, 35% shooter historically. So that's probably where his level is going to end up being. And they were kind of shaky on the offensive end coming into the season, and they've gotten a lot of unexpected offense from Lewis, like you said, and Shrabez like that. And even Sean McDermott, the freshman coming off the bench, he's been better than I expected, at least. So I don't know if they're going to continue to get that kind of unexpected offense when they start playing against, you know, a Big East schedule night after night. But if they do, then, yeah, they can still continue to play at this level and be a top 25 team and a, you know, top 4, top 5 seed come tournament time.
Yeah, Butler currently 13th in the AP top 25 and the coaches poll. So they are the third highest rated Big East team currently. Okay, so we will move on down to, I don't know, Rick.
Marquette.
Seton Hall or Marquette?
Marquette.
Okay, we'll go to Marquette. So Wojo's boys, Rick's favorite coach, off to a 9-3 start in non-conference in the non-conference schedule, 38th KenPom. better on offense and defense, 22nd in offensive efficiency, 84th in defensive efficiency. Not really any big wins on their slate necessarily. They went to Georgia and got a win. Georgia's 56, and they beat Vanderbilt, who's, you know, just decent on a neutral floor. Vandy's 75. Their losses, they took a pretty heavy loss at number 29, Michigan, lost to Pitt and to a team whose name I cannot read on my list here, Wisconsin. I'm sorry, lost to Wisconsin at home and to Pitt on a neutral site. They are 2-3 against the top 100, 0-2 against the top 50, and their strength of schedule, again, really being dragged down by their bye games, is only 241, which is pretty bad, but actually is kind of par for the course for the bottom half of the Big East so far. I guess with this Marquette team, again, you know, a lot of moving parts from last year. Obviously, Henry Ellenson is gone. They seem to have brought in like an entire new team of guards this offseason, and there's been a lot of turnover from that front as well. So, Doug, maybe you can start off by just kind of talking us through what personnel Wojo is running out there with Marquette this year and how they're lining up.
Yeah, they've got, like you said, they brought in the two new freshmen. Marcus Howard is highly touted. He's actually 17 years old. He started a year early. He's a 5'11" point guard out of Finley Prep in Vegas. And he's been playing really well, playing 20 minutes a game and putting up maybe around 10 points a game and shooting the ball well. He's a left-hander, but he shoots the ball extremely well. And then they brought in another shooter on the wing, Sam Hauser, local kid from Wisconsin. And he's playing even more. He's starting and playing nearly 30 minutes a game and shooting the ball about 50% from three. And that's really kind of changed their offense from a team last year that struggled from the outside playing around Henry Ellenson into a team that really goes four out with one in, with Luke Fisher being the only guy down in the paint. And so they've played a lot more up-tempo every year under – you look under Wojo, they've gotten a little bit faster tempo-wise and shooting a lot more threes. They're not at Creighton's level, but they shoot the ball extremely well from the outside. The other side of that is they don't rebound the ball very well at all because they're really only running out one guy over 6'5" or 6'6". So in their three losses against Michigan, Pitt, and Wisconsin, they got out-rebounded pretty badly all three times. So that's kind of their Achilles heel. They might outshoot a team, but they also might just get clobbered down low.
Yeah, and I think you laid that out perfectly, Doug. That's why this team is going to be inconsistent in conference play. They're not tough enough, they don't rebound well enough, and they don't defend well enough to be consistent, but there are going to be those games where those guy, they don't have like a standout guy. They're all, you know, Fisher's their leading scorer in the post at 13.5 points a game, and then they just have, like you said, four wings and guards that can all kind of score. A guy like Andrew Rousey off the bench that can really shoot it from the outside, kind of a sniper. But this team overall, I think the thing about them is when they're shooting well, they're going to be good. When they're not, they're going to struggle. And offensively, I think they are better than they were last year. The pieces fit together better than they did. And Ellenson, they don't have Ellenson kind of showcasing his NBA skill set and making so many bad decisions with the basketball and taking bad shots. So I think overall they're improved, but I don't know how consistent that'll translate into the conference play.
Yeah, this strikes me as a team. I mean, one of the things that just comes that jumps out at you when you look at their schedules. Four of their wins are against the absolute dregs of Division I. So you have to wonder really how well prepared they are for Big East play. And, I mean, when you look at the way they start their conference schedule, Georgetown at home, which is a winnable game, but then at Seton Hall, at Villanova, home to Seton Hall, they're going to get we're going to know a lot about this team in the next week or two.
Let me add, for Xavier purposes, I think Xavier matches up better with Marquette than they do pretty much anyone in the conference. Like, I think that'll be two wins for Xavier and probably fairly handily.
All right. Well, moving on to teams that Xavier has not matched up with particularly well in the past, we'll talk about the Seton Hall Pirates. 10-2, 49th KenPom, so they're the fifth Big East team in the top 50. One of the few teams in the conference that's actually been better defensively than offensively. They're 43rd in defensive efficiency, 72nd in offensive efficiency. Their big wins, they won away at number 68, Iowa. They beat number 48, California, on a neutral court, and they beat number 32, South Carolina, in what I guess they're describing as a quasi-home game, so it must have been an MSG. Their two losses, they lost a neutral site game to Florida, who's number 14, and to Stanford, who's number 80 on a neutral floor, 3-2 against the top 100, 1-1 against the top 50, strength of schedule 201. Rick, we'll start with you. Your thoughts on Seton Hall in the post-Isaiah Whitehead era?
Again, this is another team where I wasn't sure how they would do without Isaiah Whitehead. And obviously they still had a lot more left than Providence did. But you look at Kadeen Carrington, and he's just been so efficient as a scorer for them in terms of shooting the ball from the outside. He's really helped them out. And then Angel Delgado and Desi Rodriguez, we know what they did to Xavier last year. So I think this is another team, and you've added Miles Powell to the mix as well. I think this is a team that will give Xavier some trouble and will be, again, just kind of a tough out in the Big East. I don't think they're the best team in the Big East, but I think they'll just be pretty solid. I don't think they'll ever struggle too much throughout the conference play, and I think they'll be in it at the end, giving teams trouble in the Big East tournament and likely making the NCAA tournament again.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And the couple things that jump out to me is they like last year, they're an extremely good rebounding team. Delgado is the best rebounder in the conference. He's averaging 12 rebounds a game. And then Sanogo is an excellent rebounder as well. He doesn't look for any offense, but he's going to give you 7 or 8 rebounds a game. So you got that inside. That poses some problems. But then a lot of their offense comes from just drives to the basket. Rodriguez is not much of a shooter, but he can get to the rim. And so they struggle sometimes against teams with some rim protection, a team like maybe St. John's or even Georgetown that has a little bit of rim protection might give them a little bit more trouble, because a lot of their offense does come from putting three guys on the floor who aren't great shooters at all. But the other side of that is they have Miles Powell coming off the bench for over 20 minutes a game, and he's kind of, I think I described him in the past as a Miles Davis 2.0.
Exactly.
Which is essentially what he's giving them is just some shooting and a little bit of passing off the bench. So they're a different team than last year, but I agree that their ceiling is a little bit lower, but their floor is a little bit higher night to night.
I think the key for what you mentioned, Doug, which is all their downhill driving within their offense, for this key for Xavier against that will be that, one, they're a little bit longer with, you know, kind of substituting Malcolm Bernard in for Remy Abel. If he continues to play at a high level defensively and even improves defensively, I think they might be a little bit better equipped to combat against all that downhill driving, because the bigs are better at getting in position. We've seen Rasheed Gaston take charges. We've seen Tyreek Jones, well, protect the rim a little bit as a shot blocker, but also get in position to try to take charges. So I think the fact that they move a little bit better, but then also know where they're supposed to be a little bit more and are in position a little bit more often than maybe at times Jalen Reynolds was last year, makes this team a little bit better in that aspect in terms of defending against those drives. But we'll see how Xavier matches up with them this year. I think it'll still be a tough matchup, especially when Xavier goes to Seton Hall.
Yeah, and
just underpinning
kind of
Doug's point, one of the things about this Seton Hall team is actually so far only 26% of their field goal attempts are from three. That's 331st in D1. And only 21.4 percent of their points are from 3-point shots, which is 335, which is almost like a Xavier, which are almost some Xavier numbers from 3 or 4 years ago when X really didn't shoot the three at all. So it does underpin how much of their scoring is based on getting the straight line drives to the rim by guys like Desi Rodriguez and Kadeen Carrington.
Yeah, one other thing, if it does get into a close game, it kind of jumps out to me that last year, 3-point lead or something like that with 15 seconds left, they would give the ball to Whitehead. Whitehead would be the guy at the line. This year, it's probably Carrington at the line, but he's a 64% shooter, 65% for Rodriguez, and 75% for Madison Jones, their graduate transfer point guard. So end of close games, whereas previous years, Big East defending Big East Coach of the Year Kevin Willard was reasonably comfortable. They don't really have the designated guide to close out games, which might become a factor because, like we said, they're going to play some matchups, especially with Xavier, that might be nip and tuck games toward the end. So,
as a team, they're shooting 61%, which I think would cause, like, if that was happening at CentOS Center, you know, people like my dad would be pulling the shoelaces out of their bright white sneakers and hanging themselves from the nearest rafter if Xavier shot that percentage for a season. Moving on to, we'll talk about Georgetown next, probably the most perplexing team in the Big East so far. I mean, perplexing if you ever thought they were good, I guess. The Hoyas are 8-4. 58th in KenPom, 56 offense, 61 defense. They have two pretty good wins, actually. They beat Oregon on a neutral floor, is number 25 in KenPom, and they beat number 45 Syracuse at the Carrier Dome, although, of course, that may have been devalued a little bit in the last week. Their four losses, number 10 Wisconsin on a neutral floor, respectable, 23 Oklahoma State on a neutral floor, respectable. They completely choked away a game against number 64 Maryland at home, and then they took a loss to number 130 Arkansas State, who actually is a better mid-major than maybe they were given credit for when they won that game. But the Hoyas overall are 2-3 against the top 100, 2-2 against the top 50, number 99 strength of schedule, which is decent for the Big East. Rick, this is your guy. This is JT3. This season has been kind of a typical JT3 masterwork so far.
Well, and it's just so frustrating to have a team like this in your conference because it's not like they don't have enough talent to come in and beat you. You know, a lot of the guys on this roster. A lot of the guys on this roster, you know, Isaac Copeland, Jagan Mosley, Reggie Cameron, guys Xavier recruited and couldn't get, lost out on to Georgetown. So it's not like they don't have talent than other teams that are doing much better than them would like to have. And yet they can't seem to find a way to put it together and have it make sense within JT3 system, and that's been the case for a while now. And I don't really know what to make out of them when I watch them because, when you put the pieces together and they play well and it looks good, it's tough. It's a tough matchup. I could see them giving Xavier some trouble. But when they play the way they typically seem to play, they just have too many extended periods where they are not good at basketball. And I can't always put my finger on why that is. Sometimes I think it's the system. Sometimes I think it's the players. And it just, for whatever reason, he hasn't been able to get the most out of his guys, and I don't see that changing. Now, does that mean Xavier beats them twice? Not necessarily, but I don't think this team will be very good. I think they'll be very similar to what they've been the past few years.
Yeah, I agree. Georgetown is the most frustrating. As a person who watches Big East basketball and kind of roots for the Big East whenever they're on, Georgetown is extremely frustrating to watch. I think the Maryland game, that was probably... That's one of the biggest choke jobs of a game I've seen in a couple of years. I will say I may or may not be going to the Georgetown Xavier game on New Year's Eve, and I may or may not be wearing a please don't fire JT3 shirt to that game. But the other thing, let's see, what takes did I have about Georgetown? I can't figure out why this team doesn't rebound any better than they do.
Horrible rebound.
They have guys who should be good rebounders. Jesse Govan is kind of indifferent about hitting the glass. Marcus Derrickson and even old man Brad Hayes in his 17th year of college basketball rebounds reasonably well for a guy, but he should be better for a guy who's 7 feet and 290 pounds. They play two legitimate bigs most of the time, but they still get out-rebounded. You look at the Arkansas State game, they got pounded on the boards against Arkansas State coming into the Verizon Center. And so it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but it's one of those things about Georgetown that make you scratch your head.
Yeah, Marcus Derrickson should be a much better rebounder than he is. He's a weak link, and then obviously Isaac Copeland was a problem too for him in terms of his rebounding. So they're a horrible rebounding team, especially on the defensive end. I think Xavier will take advantage of them there. But in terms of how the rest of the game will play out, it's a tough call. Again, you just kind of look back to what you see in the last few years. They've been pretty random games. When you look at what's happened between Xavier and Georgetown, I think Xavier's usually the safe bet, but Georgetown always has enough talent to make it interesting.
All right. The next team, as we continue with the sort of middle class of the Big East, is Providence, who up until a week ago, I might have said, was kind of like the was maybe the pleasant surprise of the league so far. 61st KenPom, they're 10-3. Not a good offensive team at all. Only 123, but playing really good defense. 27th in the country in defensive efficiency. Got a nice win in their massive rivalry game against Rhode Island at home. They also beat Memphis on a neutral court. Their losses are to number 41 Ohio State away. That's respectable. Number 3 Virginia on a neutral court, very respectable. And then inexplicably, they blew a double-digit lead and lost to just a garbage Boston College team on the road last week. They're 2-2 against the top 100. 0-2 against the top 50, 276 strength of schedule, which is really bad. Rick, when I think of Providence, obviously the tradition that Ed Cooley's had has been great point guard play, Chris Dunn, Rice Cotton. I think back to my childhood in the immortal God Sham God, and maybe the most important Providence point guard of all time, at least for influence on basketball today, is the former Doris Sable, now Doris Burke, who is an all-league point guard for Providence back in the 80s. What does their point guard situation look like this year, and is that tradition of good point guard play at Providence going to continue?
Absolutely. I tell you what, Ed Cooley should have no trouble recruiting point guards with the way he has developed guys and his eye for talent, finding players that are, you know, sometimes late bloomers, sometimes really talented guys like Chris Dunn, obviously. He's just done a tremendous job of identifying talent and then molding that talent once they're on campus. Kyron Cartwright might be the most improved player in the entire conference this year. His game's taken a major step forward. He has the fifth highest assist rate in the entire country. He is a ball screen point guard that dribbles a ton and makes a ton of plays for his teammates, makes everybody better, and he can knock down the three-point shot. He doesn't shoot a ton of them. He chooses his spots in terms of when to look for his own jumper, but he has been excellent for this team, and I think he's the type of guy that gives Xavier trouble. Again, because you're talking about ball screen point guard, quick, short jet quick type of guy that gets in the lane and makes plays once you're in scramble mode, and that's kind of the way to attack that pack line defense with the hard hedges that Xavier runs. So I think this is going to be a really good test early for Xavier to kind of show us where they're at, because I think they are more talented than this Providence team overall, but they're going to have to play really disciplined defensively and really well on the other end, to win.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Cartwright has taken a huge step forward. I didn't expect that. And Emmett Holt down low has played, former Indiana big man, 6'7", so he, in Providence terms, he's pretty much the tallest guy on the roster. He qualifies as a big man. And so he's taken a big step forward from what I thought he was going to be. I thought he might be a role player coming in for 20 minutes a game, but he's playing nearly 30 minutes a game, giving him 14 points and 6 rebounds a game, and shooting at 52% from the field. So he's given them a lot more than expected and kind of given a post presence to not just get hammered on the boards. Saying that, though, they are kind of in the same category as Marquette, in a team that has a couple offensive weapons from the perimeter, but not much down low, and they can go through spells where they just get hammered on the glass. Where they went out to Columbus and they played tough against Ohio State, a good Ohio State team, but lost that game in large part because they got hammered on the glass, and that will show up, I think, throughout Big East play, and probably on Wednesday night if Xavier's bigs come to play.
Yeah, this is a game that you really need Rashid Gaston to take it to him, because they don't have that type of length and athleticism around the rim to give him much trouble, and he's so much bigger, stronger, more physical than the guys they have down low. He has to dominate the glass. Same thing with the rest of Xavier's team. This Providence team is long across the board. You know, Kyron Cartwright's small, he's 5'11", but then they go 6'6 to 6'8 for the rest of their players. So from two guard to five, they're fairly long and mobile, but they're just not bulky and no really rim protection, as you mentioned. Emmett Holt is an interesting player. It's going to be interesting to see how Xavier guards him. He's a driver for a big man. He faces you up and drives you a lot. So kind of an interesting piece that they have there that gives some teams some trouble. They run lots of little quick hitter plays for him and use it as quickness. So Gaston and the rest of Xavier's big men will have to be alert for that. yeah, this Providence team will be an interesting test for Xavier, Dan.
Rick, were you more depressed by the departure of Tommy Hamilton or Quadri Smith from the Big East this offseason?
Well, Tommy Hamilton, that's been my guy from the start. Quadri Smith provided a lot of entertainment on the bench with the celebrations. He had a perfect physique for a bench man. But, no, Tommy Hamilton was – I really loved his game, and he was fat. So
we'll get to him. We'll get to his former team shortly. St. John's, the Chris Mullen era continues. 98th KenPom, not bad. They're 6-7. They got a win at Syracuse in a game. Apparently, this statistic was on, I think, Dowster's podcast, and I thought it was worth sharing because it brought back a really traumatic memory. But I guess Syracuse was favored by 14 points in the game at the Carrier Dome. St. John's wins by 33. So the 45-point delta between the actual result and the line was the largest since probably the most miserable experience of my Xavier fan career, which was in Skip Prosser's last year when LaSalle came into the Gardens and just absolutely demolished a Xavier team that should have had no problem beating LaSalle, like 80-49 in a similar, like I think X was like an 18-point favorite and just got run off the floor at home. So that was kind of an interesting nugget that was shared. St. John's has the two worst non-conference losses in the league. They lost to Delaware State at home, who's 339 in the KenPom, and also to another name that who cares?
Yeah.
Some other team on the neutral site who's 296 in KenPom.
They lost to Delaware State and LIU Brooklyn.
LIU, that's what it was. Which, I mean, I'm not an expert on New York City geography, but isn't LIU Brooklyn a bit of an oxymoron to begin with?
On Long Island.
Rick, delete that part.
We'll delete that.
Did John Kitna play quarterback at LIU? See, I told you I don't know anything about New York City geography.
Clearly.
St. John's one and five against the top 100, 1-1 against the top 50, strength of schedule 243. Whatever.
These dudes aren't afraid to shoot. I'll give them that. I mean, they jack it up. Other than that, I have really no takes to offer about this team.
My favorite thing is reading the New York Post the day after St. John's games, because for whatever reason, they like to interview Federico Mussini, who is now a backup point guard for St. John's, because Marcus Lovett and Shamari Pons have become the starting backcourt, along with Bashar Ahmed, all new faces. So Mussini always talks, but he might have some cultural difference because he's Italian or something, but he always just speaks honestly. So, like, when they lost to LIU Brooklyn at, Barclays Center in Brooklyn. And I think he said something along the lines of, yeah, we just didn't really feel like playing today, or we just didn't really feel like coming out and playing. And it's just brutal honesty, which doesn't make the Chris Mullen era look any better in Queens there. But by the same token, this is a pretty dangerous team. It's going to be one of those, they'll beat – I could see them beating Creighton or something like that at MSG,
yeah,
or beating Butler, and you scratch your head and it knocks Creighton from a 3 seed down to a 6 seed or something crazy like that.
If they beat Creighton, I will love to watch that game because it'll probably be like 120-111.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see it happening. They're dangerous. There's going to be, I think, one of the two games against Xavier, they'll give Xavier a good scare, and the other one, Xavier will win by 40.
I couldn't agree with that more. I mean, their backcourt, Lovett shooting 41%, Ahmed shooting 40.7%, Pons is shooting 42.7%, Ellison is shooting 45.7%, Mussini shooting 48.3%. That's all from three-point range, and all of them have, you know, over at least 35 attempts. All of them other than Ellison have over 50. So they are... All of their guards shoot the ball a ton and shoot it really well. So, like you said, they are really dangerous, but they are tremendously inconsistent on both ends and have a ton of flaws.
Can we also have a moment of silence for Kasum Yakwe? I love Kasum Yakwe's game. He's 6'7" and extremely athletic. He loves to rebound, block shots. He's the type of guy. He was a freshman last year, true freshman, and this year I thought he was going to take a step forward and become a guy with a little bit more offense, kind of along the lines of maybe like a poor man's Mikal Bridges, and he has taken a step back. They don't give him anything on the offensive end. He scores garbage points, if anything, and he just doesn't seem like he's going to take the next step, at least under the current regime. So somewhat disappointing for all the Kasum Yakwe fans out there, who I'm assuming there are a lot of listening to this podcast.
I think we're the number one podcast on iTunes for Kasum Yakwe aficionados.
Yeah, I assume.
That's knowing your target audience right there.
Yeah.
Speaking of your target audience, we'll close with DePaul. 7-6, 198 in KenPom, so they are like the worst by 100 spots of any of the teams in the Big East. Equally bad on offense and defense. They are 0-2 against the top 100, 0-1 against the top 50. Their best win thus far this season was against number 127 Missouri State at home, who they subsequently lost to on a neutral floor in what probably is the second most heated Big East Missouri Valley rivalry known to man. So DePaul, are they ever going to get any better? And what are Joe Hanel's chances at making the All Big East team?
Pretty high. The guy's playing a ton. Joe Hanel is starting and playing like 25 or 30 minutes a game for them. I have no idea why.
This is not a good thing.
The fact that they
DePaul's season in a nutshell, right there. Just end that segment right after you said Joe Hanel's minutes.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much all we need to say about DePaul is that Joe Hanel plays the vast majority of the game if he doesn't get in foul trouble.
I mean, this, but hey, for the record, I did not pick this DePaul team to be the dark horse or the biggest surprise this year because I knew without Tommy Hamilton, they were nothing. They had no upside. And they're terrible. Eli Kane is good. Billy Garrett Jr. has totally kind of mailed it in at this point in his career. He knows everyone around him stinks. And some nights he's still pretty good, but for the most part he kind of goes through the motions. He's not nearly the player that he should have developed into. And Joe Hanel plays 25.5 minutes a game.
Yeah. I mean, Garrett usually only plays well when his great-grandkids are at the game. now in his 47th time through college basketball. So that's if they're not at the game, then you can kind of mail it in.
Will DePaul win a game in conference this year?
I think they'll win. I think they'll steal one of two from St. John's on a night when St. John's just doesn't feel like playing basketball, and then they'll get somebody at home, not one of the top teams, but I could see them beating like Marquette or someone at home.
All right, two conference wins for them. I like that prediction. I think that feels about right. I'd put the over-under at 1.5 for the record.
Okay, so let's finish off by talking about Xavier. We kind of left them out purposefully so we can kind of put them in context and talk about where we see the teams ranked as of right now. Musketeers, of course, are 10-2, 19th KenPom, have dropped a little bit offensively to 27th in offensive efficiency, 23rd defensive efficiency, which is obviously really good. Best win is, of course, Clemson on a neutral court. They're number 23 in KenPom. That's actually turned into a nice win. After that, probably Wake Forest, number 42 at home. Their losses, of course, at number 9 Baylor, at number 60 Colorado, 6-2 against the top 100, 2-1 against the top 50. Strength of schedule is 51, which is the best in the Big East. Although it's a schedule and a – I mean, let's just face it. Xavier doesn't really. Clemson just, even though their computer numbers are pretty good so far, they don't really move the needle. That win, I don't think really impresses people that much. I mean, you don't see like a Wisconsin or an Indiana or an Arizona or some of the other teams that Notre Dame, some of the other teams that the top clubs in the league have beaten so far this year. It seems to me that Xavier, Rick, and I think you made this comment on the Skinner podcast, is probably the highest like very variable team at this point because there's a lot of unanswered questions as of the 27th of December. which was not the case last year. I mean, last year we kind of knew what they were. It was just a matter of how good they could be, how much of their potential they would realize. But this team, there's a lot of question marks, even 12 games into the season.
Yeah, like if your argument to me right now is, look, Xavier hasn't beat a truly good team, like a legit top 25 team that is, you know, that they don't have a great resume. You can make the argument to me that this isn't a very good Xavier team, and I can't say you're wrong. I mean, I can't definitively like be like, yeah, that's pretty silly. Last year, you could easily say that at this point. I would agree. So for this team, it's going to be so much fun, I think, going through the conference season because, look, they've got an incredibly difficult stretch when you look at that seven-day period where they'll play at Villanova, at Butler, and home against Creighton. You know, that starts four games in to the conference slate on January 10th. So once we hit that, I mean, that could be three straight losses. And I still don't know that you could say, like, this team stinks or anything, but everyone will be ready to completely melt down at that point. So this conference season is going to be so interesting. There's so many storylines for this Xavier team. I think they're pretty good right now. I think they have a lot of upside left still because they really haven't played to their potential other than maybe, like, one or two games. And you're adding Miles Davis back into the mix as well. So in addition to the current guys upside, there's also you're adding Miles Davis back, and Kaiser Gates at some point may start playing a little bit better, you hope. So there's still a lot of upside, I think, and room for this team to get better. They could end up being really good. They can end up being a lot better than last year even by the end of the season. But there's no way of knowing that at this point, so we're just going to have to wait and see.
I think another way of saying that, Rick, is they're right now, the ceiling on this team in terms of NCAA seed is probably a 3 seed, maybe a 2 seed if you beat Villanova twice or something crazy happens.
Mm-hmm.
But and then the low side right now is probably like a 10 seed or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if all kinds of things go wrong, I don't think they're in any danger of missing the tournament. I guess 10 seed, you're kind of close to a bubble team, but that's a lot wider variance than last year, where this time last year the high end was 1 seed and the low side was like a 5 or 6 or maybe a 7 if all kinds of things go wrong. So it's a different spot. You don't feel nearly as comfortable going into the conference season as last year.
Yeah, I would totally agree in terms of just the resume and where they're going to get what they're going to get in terms of seeding. But at the same time, just in terms of what this team is going to be on March 5th, you know, when we start talking about the conference tournament, it could be all over the place. Like, I could see this being a team that was worse than we ever expected them to be coming into the year, or I could see them exceeding people's expectations, especially based on the way they've played through the non-conference portion of the schedule. I don't think people are very high on this team right now. I don't get that vibe either nationally or amongst Xavier fans. So I do think there is a reasonable amount of potential for this team to kind of pleasantly surprise people as well.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So where do you guys see, so let's play the prediction game. I'm going to guess that everybody has Villanova number one.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So who is so now things get interesting. Rate those next three teams for me, 2 through 4. We'll start with Doug.
I played this out. I don't know if this math adds up, but I put win-loss records next to the teams. And I had a 3-way tie for second, so kind of a cop-out, 3-way tie at 11-7 between Xavier,
wow,
Creighton, and Butler. Yes.
So you've got Villanova like 16-2 or 17-1 then.
Yeah, 16-2. I pencil in Villanova at 16-2 every year, and the last 3 years that's been correct. So I did that again. So, yeah, I took Xavier, Creighton, and Butler taking a few more licks than maybe some other people thought, and ending 11-7. I could definitely see, I think Xavier and Creighton could both get to 12, maybe 13 if something crazy goes right for them. But 11-7 kind of felt right to me.
Interesting. I don't think that sounds ridiculous at all. I think that's actually a pretty good take. I am a little more optimistic about Xavier than you are. I think Xavier is second. likely behind Villanova when it's all said and done, or you know, possibly third. That wouldn't be a shock either. But I think they go 13-5 in conference play, and the games I expect them to lose will be at Villanova, home against Creighton, at Seton Hall, and maybe one other one along the way somewhere that you don't necessarily expect. But those are kind of the games that I look at and say, I don't expect them to win those.
I guess, so I would probably say I've got, at this point, I would say Xavier 2, Butler 3, Creighton 4. And the reason is that I'm kind of just taking the teams that I think have been the most battle-tested thus far. I wonder a little bit whether Creighton will be able to keep up their insane offensive performance once they get into league play and see better teams on a more regular basis. But I could definitely see a situation like Doug's talking about. So as of right now, I'm going to say Xavier 2, Butler 3, Creighton 4. Rick, play it out from there, from your end, sort of 5 through 10.
From there, God, I don't know. I mean, I think probably Seton Hall and Providence and Marquette are in a group, and then Georgetown probably falls right below them, and then DePaul and St. John's are at the very bottom.
I think the Big East gets 5 teams in. So I think Villanova, Xavier, Creighton, and Butler all will be wearing their home uniforms come NCAA tournament time. And then the 5th team is whatever team can get to 500 out of the next pack, I think, gets on the right side of the bubble. I think Marquette is the one team that does that. I think Marquette gets to 9-9.
I'll take Seton Hall over Marquette. Coaching.
Big East Coach of the Year.
Co-Coach of the Year.
I can't get over in my mind that Georgetown's a team that might be able to steal enough games against good teams to make up for the invariable screw-ups. And maybe they get to 9-9. I mean, I could see it, but I would say Seton Hall is the team that I would expect to be 5th, and then I would probably put Georgetown 6th, just because I think they have more talent, even if they have no idea what to do with it. And then Providence 7th. Marquette 7th, and Providence 8th, and then St. John's DePaul.
How many wins do you guys have, St. John's? Over or under 5?
After that Syracuse game, it's interesting. I'll say that.
Yeah, I think they can get to 6 wins, maybe 7, if they steal a crazy game. But 6 wins feels about right to me.
Dan, what do you think?
I think that's a little – I would be more inclined to go low. But I do think that they could take a scalp or two from the top tier of the league just if they have an insane shooting night. And when you have a player like Pons and some of the other guards that they have that are just super talented. I mean, a guy like that, you know, you get into a rock fight maybe, and the other team's not shooting, and it's 61-60 in the last minute of the game. I mean, who knows? I think that's a team that could win games either by completely blitzing you, like they did against Cuse, or in just kind of a home game where a visiting team is out of sorts. Maybe they have a short turnaround. Maybe they're not up for the game. So I would say like 4 or 5 wins seems reasonable to me. But I don't see them making a push of 500 or anything like that.
Yeah, no, I've got them at 2 or 3 wins, honestly, after what I've seen. I think it's worth mentioning they beat Syracuse last year too. Granted, it was at home and they only beat them by 12. It wasn't the same type of win. But then they proceeded to win one game in the conference, and that was home against DePaul. So I've got them at 2 or 3 wins this year. I just don't think I don't think anyone has a clue of what they're doing in that organization right now.
Well, whoever that guy is that gets Chris Mullin is Perrier on the bench is top notch.
He's killing it. That dude is doing a fantastic job. Aside from him, though, need to get it together.
All right. Rick, any closing takes or thoughts at this point? Anything else you want to hit on before we wrap this up?
No, I think that does it. I want to thank Doug for joining us, obviously. Doug, do you have any other overarching themes or storylines you're interested in or anything you want to throw out there about the conference before we sign off here?
No, I do not off the top of my head.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for joining us as always. Appreciate all your posts on the message board and obviously all your work on this podcast. Dan, appreciate you being here as always as well. And
I'm just here to update you guys on geography and the whereabouts of John Kitna and where his sheepskin is from.
And also so, Ethan Rogge.
And Ethan Rogge, yeah. I mean, I looked that up. I did not get a chance to give you the Yancey Gates update so I could tell you what former Soviet republic he's playing in now.
And, yeah, I mean, you came with a great stat, too, on the LaSalle Xavier game being the largest margins in the Syracuse. That was a good stat,
yeah,
too.
But I stole that directly from Norlander, so I feel kind of soiled.
I thought you stole it from Doster, which I feel better about than stealing from Norlander. I would prefer to be more Doster than Norlander on this podcast, if that's okay
with
you guys.
We'll just claim it's from Doster.
Okay, good. I'm good with that. All right, that sounds like a good place to end this podcast. We appreciate you all listening. For Dan and Doug Tift, I'm Rick. Thanks for listening, everyone.